Hi, today's March 28th, 2021. I'm Todd Ogasawara, my good friend John Westfall. And today, for Mobile Podcast 356, we have another old friend we have not seen in a long while, Johan van Mierlo. So, Johan hails from the East Coast, where it's cold and rainy today, apparently.
Hey, Johan, how are you today doing? It is. Absolutely. I'm doing good. How are you guys both doing?
We're good.
Yep. So, before we get started, a whole bunch of questions for Johan. When was the last time we saw each other? Must have been over a decade ago.
Yeah, I think so.
The last summit was 2011, and I'm not sure we were all there at the time, but at least
that was when they cut off Windows Phone.
Yeah, so we can. Because you continued on, right?
Yeah. I continued on. I continued on as a Windows Phone, and then it became more. And Windows Insider as well, MVP.
Yeah.
But that kind of was kind of separated again. So the whole MVP program kind of just gets shuffled almost every day, every week, I would say. And every year, you definitely had a new contact person within the organization. So, you know, Microsoft is a large organization, and I work professionally with them as well. It's just every year, people do internal promotions, and there's no continuity basically within in personnel and staffing within certain areas. And that makes it hard every year. And I actually just resigned as the Windows Insider MVP at the same time as our good friend Jack Cook. So we stepped out together at the same time.
Hmm. Wow. Well, yeah, we'll have to get everybody together one day for a big Gab Fest, talk about our MVP experiences. Because it was a good ride, but it was a wild
absolutely.
Ride for sure.
You know, there were good years and there were bad years, but you know, I'm glad I was part of it, and most of it is because of a network and friends like we have all together. Even though we are so far removed from each other, we back each other, we know who we are, we have all the same mindset basically, right?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. Well, let me get started with my little I guess announcement, notation, and a rant. So my notation is, as our five listeners know, last week I finally upgraded my MacBook Pro to macOS Big Sur, and the reason I hadn't upgraded it for many months after it was available for it was that frequently there are audio issues, audio software issues when you upgrade macOS to a significant version. And this was true for this one. The software I use to record over Skype, I have a funny story that Johan reminded me of about Skype. So normally when we record it using Audio Hijack. We have used Zoom and a few other things a few times. But the Rogue Amoeba software people said, hey, you know what? We're not quite ready yet, right after Big Sur was released. And so there was a beta, and I wasn't thrilled about using a beta. So in order to use Big Sur, I bought a new MacBook. I bought an M1 MacBook Air just to play with Big Sur and also play with the M1. But anyway, so I waited, but I recorded in MacBook Pro for just out of habit. I have to admit, I hate the keyboard, but I kind of like the touch bar. But at any rate, everything seemed to be in production from Rogue Amoeba over the last couple of weeks. I didn't read any complaints. So I finally made the big switch, and we recorded one with some trepidation last week, which is why we didn't have any guests last week, because I figured if John is mad at me, okay, that's fine. But if another person is mad at me, well, you know. So anyway, it seems to have worked. I published it, published out the podcast. Seems to have sounded okay. And we're going to do it again with a guest. So, Johan, don't get mad.
Yes.
It should work. I see I pressed the record button. We're 4 minutes in, so we're doing okay. Okay, my rant.
Awesome.
So, you know, 4 years ago, I bought my first Chromebook. And it was a really good experience. It's a Samsung Chromebook Plus, which I still have. And it was such a good experience that I thought, you know what? I would really like to have a Chromebook in my office because I'm too lazy to carry it back and forth. I would like to have a Chromebook in my office just to carry around to meetings, you know, not for production work, but just to carry around and take notes and, you know, that sort of thing. And so I bought a Lenovo Chromebook C330 in October of 2019, less than 2 years ago. And it was a pretty decent purchase. It's got a touch screen. It doesn't have a stylus, which is kind of a bummer. But it was okay. A little bit sluggish, but you know, I that was not unexpected given the MediaTek or whatever processor it's used. But what is bothering me is the keyboard is dying, I should say, starting about 2 months ago, at you know less than a year and a half old. It's 17 months old now, and it's just weird because the much older Samsung Chromebook Plus I bought in April 2017, so it's almost 4 years old now, works fine. In fact, I used it to do my show notes last night to type it out on. So anyway, not really having a good Lenovo hardware experience. John might recall that I bought the Lenovo USI stylus to play with a Chromebook that supports only that stylus and didn't come with one. And that thing fell apart the minute I tried to put the batteries in. It was kind of ridiculous. I wish I was doing an unboxing video because that would have been hilarious. Anyway, so that's my rant. Not really happy. I was kind of going to thinking about buying the new Lenovo detachable Chromebook. There's a new one that's coming out that is sort of a follow-up to the Duet, but I think, after my two hardware problems with it, maybe not. But at any rate, Johan, it is great. As we alluded to in our earlier conversation, Johan is recently former Microsoft MVP. John and I have been former for a decade now, 2011, during the great, what's the word for it? Great apocalypse. MVP apocalypse. Windows Mobile apocalypse in the summer of 2011. And we're, as I said, you know, John and I have been trying to catch up with old friends. Johan's definitely an old friend. I have not seen him, you know, except in photos and social media and stuff since then. So it's good to talk to you, Johan. So what have you been doing since 2011? You've been keeping busy, or?
Absolutely. As most of you, knew from my MVP days, I just came back from Holland when I started becoming an MVP and, you know, the whole Windows Mobile stuff. And that kind of my technology background in blogging and things like that landed me a job actually with a U.S. company from a factory out of Sweden that makes mobile device holders that included charging as well. And the company is called the factory is called Brodit. And the U.S. company is called ProClip. And ProClip is actually part of the solution. It's a custom mount that snaps into your dashboard. And then you have a custom holder for your phone. You combine the two. You have a perfect marriage, basically. And you have something custom for your car and custom for your phone. So I've been with ProClip now 14 years. But oh boy, has it evolved. We were a consumer-focused business. Where in the last 5 years, now 90% is B2B. So if you go to our website, you only kind of see by default, you kind of go for your car and you go for your phone. But what we have done is, if you think about the industry, think about the trucking industry especially, which is my my forte at this point. I have two other colleagues that are more in the warehousing space. Like think about forklifts, think about the handgun scanners that you see. Those are the big brands like Zebra and Honeywell. You see them at the airport too. You know, they scan your luggage outside. So we do create a lot of cradles now for OEMs like Zebra and like Honeywell. And on my end, I work most of it on the Samsung side. Or on the cell phone side, we're looking at Cat phones, Kyocera phones, the more like the ruggedized systems.
The hardware systems, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So also the Apple iPad is also kind of coming into the B2B as well, but not as big. But Samsung is really, really big. So they're pushing out really all the Windows devices that are used to be in the field. The Windows devices, there were just no updates anymore. And there were preparatory devices too, where people would super expensive, you know, you think about the Panasonic Toughbooks in the police vehicles,
yeah.
You know, Those are devices that are like $3,000. And then you have to get the mounting equipment from companies. You add another $1,000 or $2,000, and you have to have it installed.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so if you look at your police department budget and they have that, that budget is huge. However, Samsung says, oh, well, Windows can do, we can do it under Android way faster, you know, with MDM, with Knox, you know, there's so many applications. And what we have done with ProClip is we have one large, the largest garbage customer in, or garbage company in the US, asked us, hey, I can get this Wi-Fi tablet. It only cost me $200. Can you make a case for it? We put an OtterBox case on it. Can you make a holder for it? You know, yeah. That allows for charging. So we made a real custom holder for that specific Tap E tablet. The OtterBox Defender case was on it. We slid it in, and it perfectly connects on the connector to charge. But it had to be longer because you have to protrude, of course, the depth of the OtterBox case. So all dandy. Till about a year later, the company had about 10,000 tablets or 10 or 20,000 tablets bought up. But they didn't have them all deployed. So then it came to the last 5,000 deployments. But OtterBox didn't have cases anymore.
Oh, wow.
because it was end of life, right? So, yeah, right. So an OtterBox, they create an injection mold. They need at least 20,000 new cases being manufactured at the same time. So OtterBox said, no, we're not going to do that. And we, with ProClip, we machine our products. So I can make one, I can make two, I can make 20,000. I can do it now, and I can do it 10 years from now for exactly the same product. That's how unique we are. So we started working on it. So we build our own protective case, which we call the Tough Sleeve. So it's a machine case that the tablet lays in. The connector is power connector is built into it. We screw it together, and you have a drop protection on 6 to 8 feet of concrete. You can just drop it. However, the power is rerouted to the back of it with pogo pins. So now I have a consumer device that I completely make commercial. But creating pogo pin connections, and we have a docking station there it clicks into. So now I can do thousands and thousands of insertions, which is even better than trying to do a micro USB port or USB-C port, because the weakest part of the tablet is the charging port. So the Tough Sleeve became so popular that our docking station is so universal that we create Tough Sleeves now. So we basically, we are really still great partners with OtterBox, just on a whole different level. But yeah. People now, all the consumer tablets that you can think of or consumer phones, we can put a Tough Sleeve around it and it goes exactly in that same docking station. So the garbage industry really brought us, you know, asked us to design this product because of a failure of a consumer protective case to being run out of stock and not be able to make it. So that became big. And then the trucking industry in the United States went to new rules and regulations because the trucking industry is was in the U.S. as old as you can think about, right? Everything was pen and paper. Nobody had things. Maybe they had a machine in there that could read out maybe a little bit of an engine information and oil changes, whatever it was. But the governments required what they call an ELD mandate, which called as an electronic logging data management system. And in that mandate, it said you need to have a device permanently mounted on the dashboard that you should be able to hand over to the police officer when he pulls you over so he can see hours of service, how long you have been sitting behind the wheel and things like that.
Ah.
So every long-haul truck that does more than 100 miles on a day from their hub has to have one of these in their vehicle. So it exploded completely for us. So, and there's so much that comes along with it. I mean, we're talking, of course, first we're talking about you need a tablet, you need a data connection, or it needs to be a Wi-Fi connection that's connected to what they call an ELD unit, which is kind of a computer built into the dashboard or behind the dashboard that takes all that information. And either that computer has a data connection in the cloud and it sends a Wi-Fi copy of the data to the tablet, or it sends a Wi-Fi to the tablet, and the tablet pushes it in the cloud with the LTE connection that they have, because it needs to be instant, constantly communicating in the cloud back to wherever it is. But now, you see these Samsung tablets can do anything. They can do proof of delivery. They can start scanning. So it's not just an ELD unit just to log their hours. They can do their routing. They can do their navigation. Yeah. So these consumer tablets now, we are pushing them out as rugged devices, and they're being used for everything. So Canada is due by June.
Wow. You know, it's funny. John and I have kind of written off the whole Android tablet industry, but it sounds like it found a real vertical, you know, hold in certain industries that I didn't know about.
Yeah. Absolutely. Samsung has a huge push in that between the Tab A's, which are the LTE connected. That is the consumer grades that you still can get, say, at the carrier stores, you know, AT&T, T-Mobile and Verizon, those three basically right now. And in Canada, Bell, TELUS, things like that. But they're also being pushed through distribution as well. But the Samsung now also has the Galaxy Tab Active line. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Tab Active. Basically, it's the same consumer device, but they put their own rugged skin around it with pogo pins on the bottom. And it has a little bit more of a lower temperature range and higher temperature range operating systems. So nothing like the Panasonic Toughbooks that you see in the police department, you know, with the extreme temperatures. But they're getting close to it. So yeah, between the trucks, the forklifts, and you know, those two verticals are really big. Ambulances, you know, I do everything of New York City right now as well. So you know, the accounts that we have are really, really large. You know, so very successful, basically.
Wow. Well, you know, it's interesting because neither John nor I nor any of our previous guesses I can think of are anywhere related to hardware manufacturing, and so we haven't been hearing this stuff. So this was all this is all news to literally news to me, and like most people, I'm always kind of interested in how the sausage is made, but I rarely get a chance to hear or see it. So thank you for that. That was pretty cool. Really did not know the little swivel that ProClip made, because I think of it as, you know, I've bought stuff from ProClip. I thought of it as a consumer, you know, consumer consumer good. I never thought about the B2B stuff.
Yeah, and it started very easy about people that like their products said, hey, can you do something for my company as well? You know, personal users. And this whole trucking industry, it's a transformation that needs to happen where, you know, trucking companies now have to hire IT professionals. They have to hire software developers. They have to work with companies to do the MDM and 24-hour, you know, support at the same time while these trucks are on the road. So, you know, the trucking company is now understands that. But Canada, for example, you know, they're still looking at, like, do I have to spend all that money? Yeah, well, it's a new mandate. You kind of have to, you know, keep up with times right now. So they're really being forced in this new development and in investment that they have to make in technology.
Yeah. And it sounds kinda like reminds an area me, where you... Oh, go ahead, John.
I was going to say, it reminds me of when you talk to people who are interested in getting into tech and they talk about wanting to be at the big name companies and the big market leaders. And, you know, I can't make any money doing something that's B2B, or I can't make any money at a smaller place. No, there's plenty of money going around. You just, you know, you have to open your mind to more than just what you see at Best Buy and what you see, you know, here and there, and realize the technology is way more places and way more integrations.
Yeah, and the problem that you have is creating, of course, is that, you know, you got your Android platform, and then you have vehicles that have camera systems that you want to bring in the feed to the tablet as well. So you have so many AI components and IoT devices, attached sensors and things like that. And all of these have different kind of platforms, right? So it's not just running on Android platform and runs on different kind of APIs. And to try to combine all that together, you know, to be able to funnel all that information towards the tablet that is LTE connected back to the hub or the owners, wherever these trucks are coming from, is a huge challenge. So there's a couple of companies out there that are now trying to create like a portal, an overlaying portal software. One of them is called Platform Science, where they try to combine everything. So they do the major development and look at all the components, all the different software packages that are out there, IoT devices, anything that can sit on a truck and can be done with the truck. They combine that all together and have it all communicate with each other. Which, so, and that's the next step up. And these companies are being bought up now by truck companies. So I'm sorry, truck manufacturers, not companies. So say, so think of Continental owns now an ELD company. But you also have Schneider, that's a large trucking company, owns, for example, a software company that really does all this stuff. So you see a lot of that money, you know, converting where you have maybe 12 ELD companies or 50 ELD companies that are going back down to six because people are buying each other out right now. And then major stakeholders are going to be the people that are creating these trucks. And you will see everything being built into the truck automatically on a big monitor already.
Wow. A truck area.
Different version of how we think of trucking. Yeah.
Yes.
Like Todd says, a truck area network.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, I have an old friend who was a long haul trucker until he decided to go back to school and became a clinical psychologist. But I know, kind of a shift, a little bit of a pivot there. Mm-hmm. But I got to tell him about this podcast because I think he'll find your story about the modern long haul trucking or trucking in general really interesting. Really,
so I think it's the transformation that's needed. And eventually, you know, people have been hearing about the self-driving trucks, right? Where you're on the highways, they will pull off, they dump off their trailer, pick up another trailer and get it back. And then the last mile delivery, as they call it, would still be personal drivers that pick up these containers and bring them to the stores. But at least the highway travel, that could be fully automated with self-driving trucks. So this is kind of a step in between. Yep.
Yeah, I remember reading about the Tesla sub that does trucks. At any rate, whole nother topic I know nothing about. But anyway, more catching up. So now that we no longer have Windows mobile phones or Windows phones, what are you using for a phone these days?
I have this to play with.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
the Duo. And to tell you the truth, Android was never really my forte at all. I just didn't like the management functions on notifications, so I played with it for one day. But my iPhone is my main driver, and the luxury with work is that, you know, we want to stay up to date. So every time there's a new one coming out, I trade it in and I get the newest one. So I have the iPhone 12 Max Pro.
Oh, you and John make me jealous. I bought the Pro because I didn't want a big giant one to distend my thumb anymore. But
Yeah,
I envy the enhanced optical zoom you guys have on that. Many a times I wish I had that.
It is very.
It's impressive, yeah. And my son right now, he's also 24 years old. He's actually a computer science teacher. He was into photography, and he finally got himself a new iPhone. And the photos he's taking with that, if you know the skills of how to take photos, for me, it's still a snapshot, right? But the way he takes his photos, it's unbelievable what this iPhone can do.
It is. I've even seen some professional videos recorded using an iPhone, and it's like, how did they do that? I have the same phone. Interesting. Okay, and what about laptop and tablets? I assume you're not using a hybrid one. You're just using a regular one.
No. So, and the tablet is definitely an iPad, and it's an iPad Pro 10.2, which is, that might be 5 or 6 years old already, and I don't see anything really as an update coming out because it's really more of a media entertainment device than a productivity device for me. So I don't feel the need for updating on that one, to tell you the truth. It's ideal for downloading my shows. And, you know, before COVID, I traveled at least 3 weeks out of the month. Flying, it was the ideal device for me to have on the plane. And my laptop is a Surface Laptop 3, which I love. I really love that device.
As John might recall, I have given up on Surface Pros, actually. I never had a Surface Laptop. But I had a Surface Pro. Well, I technically I had four Surface Pros because three of them broke all in a row. And after that, I said no more Surface Pros. No. Now I've got a terrible Lenovo thing, well, that, which it hasn't broken though, at least.
Well, the tricky part would be, I think, if my Surface laptop would break, there are no stores anymore now either to go and trade it in easy and make the customer happy. So that would be a different experience as well if something would happen to my laptop. Because before, you know, before the laptops, I had the Pros, I had, I keep forgetting all these names right now. But there was always something going on, and then you just bring it in and they swapped it out very quickly. That option
That's
is gone.
That's what happened to me too. I didn't even think of that. We do still have Windows Store people, just no store anymore. They're all doing training these days, apparently. And I gotta say, the one Surface I might give some consideration to is, if it ever is released, is the Surface Neo. The Surface Neo, the dual screen laptop that was, I guess, rumored several years ago, and then nothing ever happened with it. But I'm kind of curious about it. Unless it's too expensive, in which case, that's all I'll ever be is curious about it. I have thought about Asus ZenBook Duo.
That's a nice device too.
Dylan, please go ahead.
Yeah, so on the Microsoft side, so professionally, I still work with the Design for Surface team. So any of the mobile devices that are out there, we as ProClip, I manage that account where we create products to mount the Surfaces or the Duos, and they get the seal of approval and they call it Design for Surface. So if you look at like a Surface store right now, you can see like this case is Designed for Surface. So that is kind of a, you know, like before it used to be Built for BlackBerry when BlackBerry still existed.
Right.
So I have that professional relationship still with Microsoft where, you know, we know what's coming and what's going to happen. And so I support Microsoft. I mean, I will always stay a fanboy in a way. To make sure that they can be as successful as possible.
Right. So if the Neo ever is near fruition, give us a little hint, just a little, like, tug your ear in a video or something, you know. Just post a video tugging your ear on Facebook. Oh, the Neo is going to come out. All right. Now, are you using any kind? I see you have a watch on. I assume, I don't know what kind it is.
Yes.
Is that an Apple Watch? Or
It's the Apple Watch, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And this is the Series 4.
So we're all in the same club. We're all your Apple Watch users. Now, did you use anything before that? Because I was a big Android Wear fan previously. I had a Moto 360 for a number of years. And prior to that, you know, my beloved Spot Watch, which I used for many years that Microsoft killed.
Killed the service. Was that a Spot Watch? I forgot what it was. Was one of those from Indigo. I think it was a Spot Watch. Anyway, the Fitbit, of course. I had that for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I had some running watches as well. I actually had a TomTom watch, which was very interesting. Yeah, I used to be in the TomTom beta group for a long time as well. So between all the navigation systems. And I was in a group together actually with a friend of ours, Mark Briggeman. Because TomTom was in the Netherlands in Eindhoven in my hometown. So we really had a close connection. So for the longest time, I did a lot of TomTom beta testing, which included a running watch.
Nice. Now, are you... Now, I am not an action person. I know you are an outdoorsy kind of person. Are you using any kind of action camera or drone or anything like that?
No, not to tell you not. I might want to invest in a GoPro for my summer trip. But I have to take a good look at it, how much use I will get out of that. Unless it's maybe buying it just for the trip. I don't know. I want to snorkel under, you know, we like to go to Costa Rica, which is our favorite location. Okay. And there's some snorkeling there and scuba diving where you can really take some great underwater footage with a GoPro. That would be the only thing. But at the same time, you know, the best memories are up here. to tell you the truth.
Now, speaking about, you know, going to far away, at least for me, far away places, have you been using any gimbals? I finally bought one, having listened to John and a few other folks over the last couple of months. I'm still waiting for it to be delivered. But using any gimbals for, you know, walking around with your camera?
Okay. Nope, nothing at all.
I will take a walk around downtown Honolulu when I get mine, whenever it comes, and do a little demo for myself. How about internet where you are? Is it pretty decent?
Yep, it's we live on a campus, right? So we have at least campus internet, which is Wi-Fi through all. But since I work commercially from our home, I have to bring in my own. So I use an Xfinity internet. And I use an Amplify router, which I really like.
What kind of download speeds are you getting from Xfinity? Are they gig speeds or a couple hundred megs?
I mean 300 at least down.
Oh, that's decent. Yeah, I poop out at around 120, so I am envious. Even my daughter, who only lives 10 miles from me, she gets about 200 and something down, so I'm also envious of her. I think she also gets like 30 or 40 up. I only get like 12 up, so.
Yeah, but our other house that we have, our other house is in the mountains, and we just got fiber pulled in, but even if I would do it there, it's going to cost me $90, and I only get a 50 download.
With fiber,
so I know it's just nothing else there, right? It's the beginning of rural America that is getting connected, right. And I have to run my own line from a pole underground. I'm responsible for that. They will give me conduit, but it's it's a hassle. So I actually have an AT&T hotspot there, what they call a home hotspot, and everything is connected there. My cameras, my Nest, anything there, I can just check up on the house. And I signed up about a month ago for the SpaceX internet. So once it comes available through SpaceX, I can do the low
Starlink,
satellite
that one?
Internet. Starlink, that's it. Yep.
Yeah. So you know, I'm curious about the AT&T hotspot you're using. Is that a fixed cost, or is it that per gigabyte kind of thing?
So my plan is it's unlimited data.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's one of my lines. So I have a plan where I have a base pay still, and I pay $25 per line. So my kids are on it. They just pay me back now that they're adults. It's cheap for them, $25 a month for unlimited everything. But that hotspot is part of that as well, $25 a month.
Wow, that's very reasonable.
That's very reasonable.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any network or cloud services that you find particularly interesting? Most of us use iCloud on the iOS side of the world, or Google Cloud services, or anything that may be unique that we haven't heard about, or anything you just like, period. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nothing unique. I would say the iCloud, I've tried to manage it. You know, we have a family account, but if you have six people on iCloud and everybody has five devices, you know, that fills up very quickly. So I everybody kind of uses their own little things, but, you know, I use OneDrive is still my main driver, I would say.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, John knows that I've been, because Google Photos is going to stop its unlimited storage starting this summer, I moved all of my, you can still keep whatever you've got for free without any additional cost. So that's not an issue.
Yep.
But I wanted everything in one place. So I migrated everything over to OneDrive. I still have it in Google Photos, but everything I have is now going to OneDrive in preparation for this summer. And it's interesting because, you know, from a photo point of view, OneDrive doesn't have half the features that Google Photos does. So it's a good storage, you know, good price-wise, because I already pay for, you know, my Microsoft Office every year. It's just included in it. But, I really hope Microsoft starts catching up as people like myself migrate from Google Photos over to them. And I guess some people are going to go to iCloud, and some people are going to go to Amazon Photos. So it'll be interesting this summer, I think, after Google becomes the not go-to place for many people.
Yeah, I think of the three services, Amazon Photos, Google Photos, and OneDrive. So I don't have to do copy and paste. I just have three locations.
Yeah, I use iCloud and Google Photos, and now it's going to be iCloud and OneDrive after July, whatever, whenever Google makes a switch. Anything else, you know, it was really interesting about all the B2B stuff. Anything else you wanted to bring up that you're doing recently? Not that you have so much free time by not being an MVP.
I just ordered a Tesla.
Oh, wow.
Oh, very cool.
So that's going to be new.
That is nice.
So what made you decide to take the jump for a Tesla?
So 2 years ago, I kind of bought my dream car, which was a Volvo XC90. And it was a dream car for a couple of reasons, just the looks of it, a Volvo, Swedish, you know, but also the technology that was built into it. So the autopilot that it has, which basically does the self-driving, you just have to keep your hand on the steering wheel on the highways. The safety features for backing up or you know, automatic braking and avoiding, it was awesome. But, you know, it drinks quite some gasoline. And our kids are out of the house. The kids, but we both bought our kids like Corollas, so they're set. They're, you know, out of college, one last year, in college next year. So, you know, and we only have a dog, so I don't need a big car anymore. Mm-hmm. So I say, you know what, if I spend this and I still can get decent money back for the car, which I did, I'm selling it on Wednesday. I will be carless till Tesla lets me know when mine is coming in, because they're kind of backordered a little bit. You know, charging, if, you know, on campus, we have charging poles here, which are not the super, you know, the superchargers from Tesla, but they still charge about 20 to 30 miles an hour. And it costs me $1 a minute. Or $1 an hour. So if I want to fully charge that for the 300-mile radius, it's going to cost me $10 to fill up versus $60 right now in my Volvo.
Yeah. So if you have access to the power, it's a smart move, you know. And so, but I'm curious, your travel to your cabin. Do you have enough spots on the way there? What about when you're there?
Yep. So the cabin is 140 miles. So I definitely have to plan it, but I just got downloaded a couple apps. It's like PlugShare. That gives me, because, you know, Tesla will only tell you where the Tesla superchargers are, but these chargers, you know, they're all compatible with an adapter. So there are ways and locations on the way I can stop. And at the cabin, I will install something that I can plug in, you know, at my cabin, just an electricity.
Yeah.
So on campus, we're not allowed to.
Yeah. The Tesla has a like 250-mile range, though, right? So you can make it on one charge. You just need to charge it back up once you get there, I think.
The one I'm getting has 320 miles range. So I'm getting a Tesla Model Y. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, you could go and come back if you don't drive around while you're at the cabin. In theory,
you can charge it on a regular outlet as well, but it only charges maybe 2 or 3 miles per hour.
Yeah.
So you know what? All of those, if that's how I have to begin, every mile is a mile for me at that point. But you know, the infrastructure is just getting better because it's going to blow up. The EV market is going to blow up like crazy. So that's definitely my, my next thing to deep dive into. Let me put it that way. I've been doing a lot of research in the last couple of weeks, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Please do let us know when your why comes in, because we want to, you know, we want to talk to you about other things too, but I definitely want to hear your experiences with the why. I'm really, curious. I don't think I want to buy, I'm still waiting for the Apple iCar. You know, Project Titan, I don't think it's going to happen anymore, but you know, hope lives eternal, right? So we can only hope. All right,
well, you always can test drive one if you have a dealership, so they're just schedule a test drive, just have fun.
Yeah We actually do have a dealership here. I know several people who have it, and I do want to tell you a funny story though. So many years ago, it must have been 10-11 years ago, pre-Tesla, I think, a good friend of mine bought a Nissan Leaf, which is one of the very first all-electric cars. But it only had a 90-mile range, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, assuming you don't go up mountains and stuff. If it's pretty flat, you can get 90 miles out of it. And I remember he called a bunch of friends. You know, I mean, it's a small car, so it wasn't a huge bunch of friends. But he says, "Hey, I'll come pick you up, and we'll go have breakfast somewhere," you know. And he said, "Sure, it'll be fun riding in your new, you know, all-electric vehicle." And so he picks us up, and he said, "Okay, hang on, let me just look at my charge. Okay, yeah, we can make it there and back." You know?
Oahu's
a small place, but when you've got a 90-mile range, you really got to think.
It's, you know, and I have battery envy. If I look at my phone, if it's below 50%, I am not comfortable. So
I'm with you.
So I charge my phone any moment I can. So I wonder indeed how my battery envy will be with the car, for sure.
Well, at least you are in a part of the country that has a good amount of charging. You know, I was just looking at PlugShare for my area, and yeah, I mean, there's in a two-hour drive radius of where I'm at, there's, I think, 3 Tesla chargers, you know. And then there's the best I could do would be there are enough RV parks where I could get on an older style NEMA charger or something like that.
Yeah.
It's the thing that has stopped me from looking seriously at electronic vehicles or electric vehicles, just because I still travel these crazy trips to see my parents and see Carrie's parents and all of that. And it's just not an option where I'm at. The rural part of America, just like with internet speeds, as you were talking about with the cabin, and my in-laws are 45 minutes outside of Pittsburgh, but yet they still have like 1 megabit per second DSL speeds. So, you know, it's crazy that we have all this high end of connectivity and power and everything else, but the low end is still alive and kicking, sadly.
Yeah, and the reason why I chose a Tesla is because they keep evolving. They keep updating the software. My Volvo never got an update on my software for the last 2 years.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised by that.
Yeah, their market is to sell new cars.
Yep.
Yeah,
and gotcha. Tesla's market vision is we want to improve. We want to give you what you actually paid for certain things. The full self-driving is not there yet.
Right.
But you invest in that in advance if you want to. So a couple of years ago, it was $3,000. It was $6,000. Now it's $10,000. But it's an investment you make for the future. So, Tesla does come with updates with new features and all that stuff on existing vehicles. And I think that's a great plan, you know, to keep your customers basically.
And I can't remember if it was Elon Musk himself or some other Tesla person, but I remember it might have been Musk who said, you know, Tesla is a battery company that builds cars. So that was his perspective. And I actually know a former coworker who got one, I think the first Tesla home batteries in his home. I haven't talked to him in a long time, but I found that fascinating. He went completely
Those are great backup batteries. You don't need a generator. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he went completely off the grid. He put solar, you know, PV photovoltaics on his house, and that's how he charges up the Tesla batteries. So it's awesome. Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Any rate, Johan, thank you so much for making the time to talk with us. It's something we've been wanting to do for a while, and we will do again. And we're going to have to do a group chat, and, you know, maybe now that we're – not you and Jack and a few others, but for the rest of us who are now 10 years away from our MVP days – maybe we'll do a 10 years later look back with a bunch of our friends at one podcast.
Yeah.
Talk about
Eric Hicks, Stephen Huge, Mike Temporelli. You know.
Yep. So we've had some of those folks on here. I think we've had all of them on the podcast at one time or another. Eric was just on 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yep. I saw that. Yep. Yeah, Mike Temporelli and I, we did a lot of stuff together, and even now in our current work, we kind of still. Connect sometimes because we have the same customers.
Interesting.
Yeah, because Eric works for a company called AirWatch. You know, you remember Sody controller? He works for Sody.
Yeah.
And AirWatch is the same thing. Basically, it's a big MDM company. And the MDM includes like all the Coca-Cola machines. So if you know the Coca-Cola machines where you pick your flavor? All these choices are being sent out back to Coca-Cola, so Coca-Cola knows exactly what people are liking or are not liking as well. So, and he is with AirWatch in that system, and AirWatch also does, you know, tablet management MDMs as well. So he is in the police force, the same waste companies that I'm in, he's in there as well. So yeah, we connect quite a bit.
Nice. Yeah, we haven't spoken to Mike in a while. Although I did see him a number of years ago, and he and his family were here on vacation. I wasn't able to spend much time with them, but I did spend like an hour or 2 hours with them, which was a lot of fun. And of course, you know, hardly anybody's, well, I shouldn't say that. Our visitor count has been going back up in Hawaii, so that's a good thing. And, you know, hopefully everybody will pass through here someday soon. But anyway, it was great talking to you, Johan. We'll have you back on. I don't know who's up next. I still got to go send out some invites. Rocco is going to be on end of next month, so that one I know for sure. But thank you for, thank you for accepting the invitation and spending some time with us. This was great.
Yeah, appreciate it. Anytime. You know, and if there's anything else you want to chat about, we can always chat offline too, if you just want to. So again, John, congratulations with your efforts.
Thank you very much. And, you know, it's been great catching up, and I'm glad to see that you've been keeping yourself productive, both personally and professionally.
Yes, absolutely. Perfect.
All right. This has been MobileViews Podcast 356. We were graced with the presence of our old friend, Johan von Mierlo, and we'll talk to you next.